What do board members need to do to avoid being sued by the climate movement? Well, who wants to be sued? Probably none of our listeners. Climate change has transformed from a distant environmental concern to a pressing business issue. With its impact on operations, supply chain, regulation, and stakeholder expectations, it has become imperative for boards to discuss. The rhetorics between business and climate activists have hardened. We see it in the news. Friends of the Earth in the Netherlands have sued Shell and are now in the process of suing the financial services organization ING. What should boards do? I'm delighted to talk with Donald Pols. Donald is the director of Friends of the Earth in the Netherlands. Friends of the Earth in the Netherlands have won already a climate case against Shell and are now launching a new climate case against ING. They're quite confident that they will also win this case. A warm welcome to the Better Boards podcast series. Our frequent listeners know I'm Sabine Demkowski, founder and managing partner of Better Boards. We make the boards of the most ambitious organizations more effective. Our mission at Better Boards is to contribute to creating better boards. We provide clients with an evidence-based approach for board evaluations and board development programs. We have created an innovative board evaluation platform organizations can access and use as part of a fully facilitated board evaluation or for their internal evaluation. Large professional service firms are also welcome to use our platform. To fulfill our mission, we give a voice to all who care about creating better boards. Donald, thank you so much for contributing to the Better Boards podcast series.
Thank you very much for the invitation and giving me the opportunity to speak to your listeners.
Donald, you made quite some headways. I mean, I've read about this case in the Financial Times. You are suing ING Bank, a financial services organization, for its climate record. Maybe explain our listeners the background of this and what actually led you to this drastic step of suing a financial services organization.
Yes, ING is the banker of the climate crisis. It's the largest bank in the Netherlands, one of the largest financiers of fossil fuels in the Netherlands and globally. And it's a system bank, one of the 30 system banks as identified by the Financial Stability Board. And this gives ING a unique opportunity to contribute to fighting dangerous climate change or, and that is our assertion, contribute to creating more dangerous climate change. So that is why we ask ING to reduce its contribution to dangerous climate change by half in 2030. And that is not for nothing. If you measure the contribution of ING to dangerous climate change, according to its own documents, it contributes 61 megatons of greenhouse gases. That is comparable to a country like Sweden.
Wow.
And if you ask why a financial sector institution, I can imagine that some listeners would be surprised by that. But we believe, and that is a very basic assertion from Milieudefensie, that we can and will manage to address dangerous climate change if all relevant actors contribute, including the financial sector. And the financial sector is crucial to achieve climate stabilization and prevent the most destructive impacts of climate change. You know, the financial sector manages over 400 trillion in assets globally. And the decisions made by the financial sector therefore largely determine the direction of the development of the global economy. In popular culture, this understanding of the role of finance is reflected in popular expressions like "Who pays the piper calls the tune," "Money talks," songs like Abba's "Money, Money, Money," you know, saying "Money makes the world go round." So the role of finance in redirecting the development of the economy is broadly recognized, and the need for them to act in accordance with the climate science is also recognized. For example, the financial sector is included in the Paris Climate Agreement and even Article 2. So just following the first article, which reflects a bit of the priority policymakers see for the financial sector. But also the UN panel of climate scientists, the IPCC, recognizes the role of the financial sector. The International Energy Agency, European Central Bank, the Dutch Central Bank, and even initiatives from the sector itself, for example, the Net Zero Alliance.
But there are quite some initiatives going on, aren't there?
Yes, there's a lot of initiatives going on, and we often refer to these in our notice of liability. And what we're saying is it's time to start acting on all these initiatives instead of only talking. You know, we as Milieu Defensie published our first report on the climate policy of the Dutch financial sector, including ING, in 2006. And still the necessary action is lacking. So it's time, after speaking to each other for almost 20 years, you have to decide if action does not take place to escalate to a next level, and then going to court is such a next level.
Because I just wanted to ask, you know, why do you have to go really to court? I mean, is there no other way to work with each other to come to arrive at precise actions?
In a democratic society, the first step is always to have a dialogue and a conversation with each other. But going to court is part of our democratic system, and it allows parties that have a difference of opinion to put their differences of opinion to the court in order to get a judgment. But more fundamentally, the main reason, the main motive or vision of Milieu Defensie in engaging companies in court, this is rather abstract, but it is what is called the regulatory gap. And that refers to the fact that there's a democratic deficit in which large multinationals, large companies, and their emissions are not regulated. And that is because companies are multinational, while regulatory frameworks are national. So there's no multinational governing body that regulate and sanction multinationals and the financial sector. And this democratic deficit is illustrated by the response of many companies to our call to implement the Paris Climate Agreement. So the first response when we demand that companies act in accordance to the Paris Climate Agreement is they say, we didn't sign the climate agreement in Paris, and therefore it's not applicable to us. But the fact is, governments signed the International Climate Agreement of Paris, and therefore it should be applicable to everybody. But large multinationals think that they are outside of the law. And that, of course, is no way. It's a success recipe for chaos if major actors see that they are outside of the rule of law.
When you look at the written material that organizations produce, I mean, their sustainability reports, I mean, these are big, glossy reports in the meantime. Not sufficient for you?
Yes. Yeah, that is true. And to give you an example, the marketing budget of Shell is bigger than its renewable energy budget. So indeed, they spend enormous amounts of money to do marketing on how important they see climate change and acting on climate change. But in the act, the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And in climate change, that means the proof is in the CO2 reduction. And take ING, for example. In its glossy sustainability report, it says it recognizes climate change. But a basic step, if you want to recognize climate change and the international climate agreements, is to have an overall reduction objective target for your own company. And ING lacks this very, very basic requirement.
So what should boards of organizations do now? What are you looking for that they do in order to take the necessary action?
It starts with recognizing that climate change is a material issue that is crucial for the financial continuity of a company. It is not an ESG issue. So if there's only one message I can give to your listeners, it is climate change is not an ESG issue. It's a material issue. And once they recognize that, the practical steps is to design and implement a policy that is aligned with climate science and the international climate agreements. An adequate policy for business starts with an overall objective or target to reduce their contribution to dangerous climate change across the whole value chain. In jargon, it's called scope 1, 2, 3. And that means that in addition to an own target for its own activities, it should also demand climate plans from its main corporate suppliers and main corporate clients.
But again, I mean, I have seen in organizations that they change the measures for their suppliers. I mean, in some industries, the demands on their suppliers are quite high. What more needs to happen? What more should boards actively do?
If they are already doing it, like what you are referring to, because there are clearly companies that already act in accordance with the climate science and international climate agreements, then that is okay. And I would say companies that are on the forefront should publish their policy and include it in their public communications as an example to other companies. And there are many companies that do it indeed, like you're saying. For example, only in the Netherlands, the largest Dutch pension fund and the fifth largest in the world, ABP, has already implemented a policy in accordance with the International Climate Agreement. Another Dutch pension fund, IPSV, has done something similar. The Danske Bank in Denmark does something similar. And so I can make a list of companies that already have aligned their policy with international climate agreements.
And what is the biggest difference for you these organizations have done versus the organizations that have not done the right thing, in your view?
Basic. It all starts with leading from the top. You know what they say, you don't push a rope, you pull a rope. So recognizing in the board that climate change is a company priority, and that will result in climate change being a fixed issue on the agenda of the board, and then translating this recognition of the importance of climate change to policy, both for the own company and for suppliers and clients.
Do you think that directors have the necessary know-how in order to do so?
No. It's clearly a new issue. And what we notice in our engagement with companies on a C-level is that this knowledge is lacking in general. And I would wish for a trend to become visible and increase. And that is that you will, at C-level, will have corporate sustainability office, CSOs, that has this knowledge as being a member of the board.
I haven't seen any boards who have one of those officers yet. Have you?
Mostly it is included in a chief risk officer. Sometimes the chief marketing officer also has sustainability. But I agree with you totally. If you recognize that we are in the midst of a climate crisis that will impact hundreds of millions of people in a negative manner, that will impact the financial continuity of companies in a major manner, then you would expect that this knowledge would be part of C-level management. But it is not so, unfortunately.
Now, I mean, we should say to our international listeners, actually, that you are basically Friends of the Earth in the Netherlands. You also have a board. Where do you see the biggest difference between your boardroom and the boardrooms, the ING boardroom, for example?
Where I visit, yeah. I visit boardrooms rather often, so I've seen a few in the Netherlands.
Which is great. Bring you in as a voice of a stakeholder, which is fantastic for those boards who already bring you in.
Yeah, that is indeed. And I welcome that, and I always take an invitation seriously. And I'd say the biggest difference is what you see, mostly if you visit a boardroom of a large multinational in the Netherlands. You have a beautiful look through the window to see beautiful Amsterdam. And when you look outside of my window, you just see other apartment buildings. But on a more serious note, I think what we share as boards is both types of boards, so my board and the boards of multinationals that I visit, are concerned with achieving and measuring impact. However, the way we measure impact is fundamentally different. So where a company board measures shareholders' value, Milieudefensie measures stakeholders' value. So for us, the essence is not how much money we make, although our turnover, if you want, increases annually. But our main major contribution, our major impact, is if we can achieve noticeable change in government policy and policy of business. That's one. And the second is, and that is very important for our type of work, we work on creating societal support for our vision that dangerous climate change can be addressed if major actors, such as large companies, act in accordance to climate policy. So I'll summarize our strategy as changing the narrative, changing the public and dominant narrative in society.
You know, that's very challenging. I speak with a lot of chairs as part of our board evaluation work, of course. And they say when the chips are down, even if the directors are well-meaning, investors want to see the money. And also the pension funds want to see the money. So even if a chair tells me about their teenage daughter or a grandchild, yeah, who really presses grandpa or the father to do something, they say, look, when I go into the city, all that counts is the money I give back. How shall these people resolve the issue?
Yeah, I recognize the challenge and the dilemma. And that is why I see our court case not as necessary being against the board of a company, in this case now the court case we launched against ING, but as a support for the board. Once we win the court battle, and I'm sure we're going to win it, this provides the board and the CEO with an instrument or an argument towards its shareholders. They can then say, we need to act. And actually, the judge in the court case against Shell, in the court order against Shell 2021, specifically said the argument of profit or a decrease in profit for a company can never be an argument to limit the necessary action to reduce its contribution to dangerous climate change. Because let's be honest, there can be no profit and no financial continuity on a dead planet.
No, thank you so much. Lots of food for thought here. We sadly have to come to an end. I always ask, what are the top three things our listeners should take away from this podcast?
I would say the following. There's a need to act to prevent dangerous climate change. And this need has become a new societal norm applicable to all corporates and financial institutions. The second is that climate change and climate policy to reduce the contribution to climate change of a company is a material issue with fiduciary implications. Not acting in accordance with this responsibility can and will have legal implications, already has and will have in the future. And on a more personal note, you're a CEO, but you're also a father and a grandfather of children and grandchildren. You're a board member, but you're also responsible for life on Earth, especially for your family. Act as if that is not only a rational, but also emotional and an ethical issue. The discussions you have and the decisions you make on a daily basis will have an impact on the future of our shared planet. Like I said, there's no profit on a dead planet. Act accordingly.
Donald, thank you so, so much for contributing to the Better Boards podcast series.
Thanks for having me.
How can we help you and your board? We at Better Boards are always delighted to hear from you. If you have an idea for a podcast, if you would like to contribute, or if you would like to hear more about the work we do with boards, or see a demo of our platform, do not hesitate to contact us. You can best reach us at info@better-boards.com. Thank you for listening.